Okay.
So our next speaker is Alba Chiaracago, and he is going to talk about equipotential photon surface uniqueness in electrovacuum. So please.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity. So I'm going to talk about a joint work with Stefano Borghini and Carla Zederbaum about equipotential photon surface uniqueness in electrovacuum. So what we did is to study spacetimes, four-dimensional, which was a solution to the source-free Einstein-Maxwell equations. And we've restricted to the solutions that are standard static, so basically that can be written as a work product of a Riemannian manifold, M G0, and via a warped function N, which is the so-called Laplace function. And basically it means that we can foliate the spacetime by a Riemannian manifold. And then we require that the solution is also asymptotically flat, which means that the Riemannian manifold outside a compact set, so this central part, which contains the compact boundary, approaches the Euclidean metric, as you probably are familiar with. And we consider these solutions in presence of a black hole horizon or an equipotential photon surface. And what we proved is a kind of rigidity statement that says that in case we have such objects, then we must be rotationally symmetric. So if we introduce another smooth function on the Riemannian manifold called electric potential, we can actually translate the problem into finding a tuple given by the Riemannian manifold MG0 and Laplace function and electric potential that satisfies this well-known system of PDEs, which involves only the Ricci curvature tensor, the Laplace-Petrami, and the Levi-Civita of the Riemannian manifold. And we require that the electric potential and the Laplace function at the boundary have a constant value and zero M psi zero. And also we require some decay condition at the spatial, at the asymptotically flat end with respect to N and psi. In particular, N approaches one at infinity. Okay. So one particular solution of that system is the well-known Reissner-Nostrum solution of mass M and charge Q. And it's up to isometry is the unique rotationally symmetric one. I just remind you the definition. So it's defined as this product, so an interval R0 plus infinity and the two-dimensional sphere. And the Riemannian metric is given by this one, G0. And the Laplace function is the following. So square root of 1 minus 2m over R plus Q squared over R squared. And this is the electric potential, as you probably know. Okay, so I'm going to remind also that Reissner-Nostrum solution has a behavior that depends strongly on the relation between the two parameters, M and Q. So we have the sub-extremal case when M is strictly bigger than Q. And so here I have a graph of the Laplace function squared with respect to the radial coordinate, and the purple graph represents the sub-extremal case. And you see that at some point N vanishes, so we have an horizon there at M plus square root of M squared minus Q squared. Something similar happens for the extremal case where M equals Q, so the orange part. But you see that the normal derivative of the Laplace vanishes at the horizon, so we have a degenerate horizon there. And in the last case, we have the super-extremal case, which can be divided into two sub-cases. So if M is strictly positive, we have this simple but weird behavior with respect to the others. And I want you to remember that there is this critical point at Q squared over M, which is going to be relevant for our analysis. And in the case of non-positive mass, we have this very simple behavior that is above 1. Okay. So now I'm going to state the black hole uniqueness theorem, and I'm going to tell you why. So basically, if we have a solution of the Einstein static equation in electro vacuum, so the system I mentioned before, that is asymptotically flat, and the boundary is connected, and it's an horizon, and zero is zero at the boundary. Then, if we have a non-degenerate horizon, the manifold is isometric to the sub-extremal horizon nostrum, so the purple case. And instead, if it's degenerate, it's isometric to the extremal one. So this theorem has already been proven multiple times, so with different techniques, by Israel, for example, by Israel, Masudur Alam, Häusler, Kruschel, and Todd. But all these different techniques somehow were then, could be applied, so adapted to the photon surface case that I'm going to introduce, and they are more or less effective. So we tackled this problem in a certain way, and we then applied it to the photon surface case, and it was pretty effective. So yeah, that's why we started from the black hole uniqueness. So what are photon surface, which is the main object that we are interested in? So they are embedded time-like hypersurface, which are null totally geodesic. And physically speaking, it basically means that if we have a photon that at some point is tangent to the hypersurface, it's trapped. And then it's maybe relevant physically speaking. And a photon surface is equipotential if the Laplace function and the electric potential are constant along each connected component of each time slice of it. And if the Laplace function and the electric potential are constant independently of which time slice I take, I have a photon sphere. And here there is a picture of a photon sphere in a rotationally symmetric space-time, as I imagine it. So in Reissner Nostrum, if this really the cylinder R equals 3m plus or minus square root of this quantity over 2. And so you see that the photons are trapped into it. Okay, so photon surfaces have specific properties that allow us to apply, to adapt the methods that people use to tackle the black hole case problem. And they are the following. So if we consider a time slice, a compact time slice of an equipotential photon surface, so P3, which is our equipotential photon surface cross in intersected with the Riemannian manifold M, with induced metric sigma, little sigma, we have that this surface is totally umbilic inside the Riemannian manifold, has constant mean curvature, has constant normal derivative, the Laplace function has constant normal derivative on it, and we have also this identity that connects these constant quantities, so the normal derivative, the mean curvature, and the Laplace function, via a constant C that somehow classifies our photon surfaces, and also the scalar curvature is constant and is related to the other quantities via this identity. So now this is the theorem that we proved. So if we have a solution to the static Einstein equation in electro vacuum, and the boundary is a connected time slice of an equipotential photon surface, then the manifold is embedded, so it's a portion of Reissner Nostrum, and it's sub-extremal, extremal, or super-extremal accordingly to the boundary data. Okay, so this theorem has been proven in some sense, but in a very specific cases. So Yazdiev, Sederbaum, Galloway, and Rogatko proved it, but for the photon sphere case, which is just the particular case that I mentioned before, so the cylindrical one that you can imagine as a cylinder in Reissner Nostrum. And also, most of them just restricting their attention to the sub-extremal case. And finally, Sederbaum, Jans, and Vichanets, Martinez proved it for the photon surface case in any dimension, assuming also multiple connected components, but also restricting to the sub-extremal case. So our method instead covers all the cases, but in four dimensions and assuming a connected component. Okay, so I'm going to just sketch the strategy of the proof. We introduce two parameters in order to M and Q that at the end will correspond to the mass and the charge of Reissner Nostrum. to write the Laplace function in terms of the electric potential or vice versa. So we consider this quantity x, and that satisfies an elliptic PDE, and we can apply the maximum and minimum principle because it vanishes at the horizon or at the boundary, at the equipotential photon surface, and at infinity. And then we have that n squared is equal to psi squared minus this, fixing the ratio between these parameters m and q, imposing that this ratio is equal to the green quantity inside the parentheses, which depends on the values of the Laplace function, the electric potential at the boundary. Then we can actually rewrite the static Einstein equation in electro vacuum just in terms of n. And we see that they are ill-posed if we operate on this set here that I'm going to call C, where n squared is equal to basically 1 minus m over q squared. So this set, if we work in the toy model of Reissner-Nostrum, corresponds to the critical point that I mentioned before in the super extremal case. That's the most difficult part of the world proof. Okay, then the problem is tackled via the cylindrical ansatz strategy that was introduced by Agostiniani and Mazzieri in the vacuum case. It's a little bit more complicated in the electro vacuum case, but yeah, so the strategy is similar. So we define a pseudo radial function that mocks the radial function, a pseudo affine function, and a cylindrical ansatz. So it means that we just define a conformal metric, G, conformal to the original one, G0. Why? Because if we consider Reissner-Nostrum, so the toy model, which is also the one we are going to obtain at the end, performing exactly this conformal transformation, we get actually the cylinder. So if we have an horizon, the green level set here, we can do this transformation, and the purple one represent to me the level set corresponding to the equipotential photon surface. We can do the same in the case where m, so the parameter m is a negative in the Reissner-Nostrum, applying another conformal transformation somehow. And this is the most interesting case. If we have the super extremal case with this critical set that I mentioned before, we apply two different conformal transformation in the two parts of the manifold that are splitted by this critical set. Okay, so a priori, this is on the toy model of Reissner-Nostrum, but a priori this critical set could be very wild. You don't even know a priori that it divides the manifold into two parts. So we had to prove it, and actually it divides the manifold into two parts, and then you can perform the conformal transformation, and the strategy is then, in order to prove that the rotational symmetry of the original metric, to prove that the conformal metric is actually cylindrical, and you just need to show that the Hessian of the function phi that I introduced before vanishes, and how you prove it, proving that the divergence of this quantity vanishes on the manifold. And clearly, I wrote it just to say, okay, clearly having a divergence, we can integrate it along between two level sets, and then applying the divergence theorem, and that's how we transfer the problem to the boundary. So somehow we just use then the properties of the boundaries of the black hole horizon or the equipotential photon surface, and to deduce at the end that everything is rotationally symmetric. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for the very nice talk. Questions? Yes, please.
So what happens if you had multiple horizons or multiple spheres?
So we had to assume that we had only one connected component so, for multiple reasons. So when you perform this, when we introduce this this ratio between m and q, somehow we are assuming that at the boundary n0 psi 0 have the same value. One could assume that multiple connected components are on the same level set, but then at the end we apply Gauss-Poinet. I mean, I of course omitted all the computations at the end, but we had to use Gauss-Poinet, and if you assume multiple connected components, the inequality doesn't work close anymore. And nothing works.
I've never looked at the photon sphere in Majumdar Papapetru. Have you looked at this? What?
But this is a multiple connected component.
Right, exactly. But I mean, so are they wild? Are these ergo regions? Are these spheres? What is the?
You mean like in the Rice?
You're saying Majumdar Papapetru, right? It has several black holes. What about the photon spheres or photo regions?
I actually don't know exactly in this extremal case what happens. So maybe I can give you the reference of Cederbaum, but I actually don't know what happens exactly if we have multiple.
So did Carla look at that if you have many components?
I actually don't know, because we were talking about this new paper of Lucetti that was also about Papapetru metrics, but yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sorry.
Any more questions? Yes, please.
My memory may be wrong, but isn't it true that Masudul Alam did not assume, just one component of the horizon? I mean, multiple components were allowed in his argument.
Yes, so with Bandi Masudul Alam, you can actually assume multiple connected components. And so it's somehow the most effective way to approach the problem. But with Bandi Masudul Alam, you have to have an horizon somehow. So you start from a general space time, and then the technique is to glue some necks that looks like the Dreiser Nostrum and till the horizon, and then you double it and you solve the problem like Banting-Masudul Alam, and then you get just one connected component. But you have to be in the sub-extremal case somehow. So that's why there are these pros and cons.
Okay, I understand. Thanks.
Thank you. There are no more questions, so let's thank the speaker again.